Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Monday, December 17th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, happy Big News Day Monday, Melody.
Oh, my gosh. And I'll tell you what, been busy today doing lots of paperwork, trying to get caught up for the holidays and everything like that. I just took a gander. I thought, well, I better get my prices pulled up here. I've been following gold all day, and I knew there was a little pressure on the Dow, but holy schmoly, the Dow down 2%, big drop at the last, must have been the last hour or so of trade, down 503 points at 23,596. The NASDAQ was down 2.25%, down 156 points at 6,753. And the S&P was down a little over 2%, down 54 points at 2,545. What a dip on a Monday morning. And no wonder I saw the comment where already President Trump is hammering, you know, Chairman Powell, don't you do those rates. This is the worst time possible you could ever do those rates. Well, ladies and gentlemen, whether he does or whether he doesn't, these markets aren't going to matter. We actually had the Dow fall even more so. It was over 600 points earlier in the day. And there was a report out about investors are worrying about the economy. And I saw one, I don't know if we're going to talk about it later on, but corporate America gives out a record $1 trillion in stock buybacks. Now you know why the markets were so high. I was also reading, Dave, that, you know, sure, it was easy money for this year, but it was a little bit harder to make money. And I think that's what people are beginning to at least admit. They kept hoping. And, you know, if the numbers aren't there, if the fundamentals aren't there, hope's not going to get you very far, you know, except not when you're hoping on the economy anyway. So, and hoping that people are going to turn it around for you, and it's not going to happen. So gold prices, you know, still reacting slowly. The dollar was down a little bit today, down 0.33, still strong at 97.09. So you didn't have a big impact on gold today. Crude oil was down 144 at 49.76. 49.76 crude oil dipped, big drop in crude oil, and you know, and it's you know, it cracks me up. Everybody talks about, well, you know, the demand. Well, yeah, if the economy is not going strong, demand is going to weaken. You're automatically have a little weaker price in crude oil. Gold today, we had a high of 1249. No, nothing big, but right now in the New York spot price, $1,246, up 7. Silver was up 10 cents at $14.74. Platinum was up 7 at $797. And the number that really doesn't make any sense is the palladium. That was up another $17 at $1,264. Let's see if there's anything other interesting numbers. Oh, what did Bitcoin do? That was up big today for Bitcoin, but why wouldn't it be when, you know, you were looking where it was breaking, you know, it was getting ready to break into, below 3,000, you know, all those out there who've been conditioned to believe that Bitcoin is your safe haven from a drop in the financial markets around the world, are being blindly misled and placing their money into something that really equates to nothing but a couple digits on a computer. And, you know, these are the same people that believe that, you know, if the computers could go down for any type of EM attack and all these other things, why would you invest in something if you don't have the confidence that the computers can, you know, they couldn't pull the plug and all the tracking and all the privacy and everything else that goes along with it. You know, buy on the dip. I guess that's what they're doing with Bitcoin, and that's what those who you know, that's what they count on, because they sure enjoy the fees that you rack up making all those purchases. The fear and greed index today, that's back down to 8. I mean, it was hovering around 12 and 13, but now we're looking at it about 8. And there was just one interesting, well, there's a lot of interesting things that we're going to talk about today. But there was one And again, everybody is focused on, going after, President Trump and so forth. And Trump is blasting the Fed for even considering a rate hike. Cramer comes out and says most treacherous market in years. Ron Paul is warning of the ugliest. We're going to talk about all of these, but let me pull up. Let me see what I thought was interesting. Now, we know that a lot of the banks have been hit. And we saw the U.S. banks. This is out of Reuters. This is a Reuters day. U.S. bank stocks tanked this month over fears of impending recession. Industry executives have downplayed concerns to colleagues, analysts, journalists, arguing that the economy is in great shape. But there is a big disconnect at this point in time between the market technicals and what we're really seeing on the ground. This is what we talk about every day. But what I find interesting is these banks. There's where did I read this? Let me pull this article up. Behind the headline numbers, showing the healthy loan books, problems are beginning to appear. They're cropping up in areas such as home equity lines of credit, which we talk about, commercial real estate, which we talk about, credit cards, which we talk about, and lenders are starting to cut relationships with customers who seem too risky. I think that's a big, big statement right there.
It's huge.
Yes.
It's huge. And at the same time, partly, largely, perhaps as a result of that, Melanie, we talk about this in the third segment today is, investors, private equity firms, are pouring money into these non-bank banking institutions, that are now providing loans to these, what the big banks call riskier profiles, the big banks have avoided since 2008. So we'll talk about that. I mean, it's a big number, of what's been loaned, and what's pouring into these companies. So anyway, that's just an add-on to what you're saying.
Yeah, so banks are beginning to pull back. And we live in an economy of easy money. So when your banks start cutting back, what do you think is going to happen? Nearly half of the applications from customers with low credit scores were rejected in the 4 months ending in October. And that was compared with 43% just a year ago. Banks shuttered 7% of existing accounts, particularly among subprime borrowers, the highest rate since the Fed started conducting surveys in 2013. Home equity lines of credit declined 8% across the industry, with growth slowing in areas such as credit cards and commercial industrial loans, the survey showed. So, I mean, this is something to pay attention to, ladies and gentlemen. And, we get asked day in and day out, well, when is it going to happen? When are things going to fall apart? You should be thankful every day that it doesn't fall apart. Because when what we are going to experience, I believe, in 2019 is far worse than what we experienced in 2008, 2009, 2010, and 12 and 11. So just keep that, just remember back and then multiply seriousness of that and where you were and how you were affected by it. And yes, gold went to 1900, and yes, gold did fall back down to 1100. But we hold gold as a way to preserve our purchasing power, to protect us against this. Sure, we can, we could invest it through the good money times, the good paper times in the past how many years. But in the meantime, you should still hold that gold in order to protect those times. It's a balancing act, ladies and gentlemen. But when your paper investments are about to go, and you know it, that's what amazes me, Dave. People know it. People know it's going to be reversed. People know there is a day of reckoning coming from DC with management, mismanagement of our money and our debt and everything else. Wall Street, the connections with the globalists, the trillion dollars of stock buybacks. Everyone knows that in this world, that there's a day of reckoning coming. That there's a day of reckoning. But yet,
there's a denial that it's coming today.
Yes.
And that's, I think, you know, it's like, gosh darn it. You know, especially, you know, those who aren't millionaires and billionaires, whether they're invested just in 401ks or, you know, they have taxable accounts that they manage another tenth of a percent or two. You know, let me ride this one day longer until the day comes when they're standing at the cliff and looking far down and thinking, oh, shoot. Should have listened to them.
Oops. And this is why we bring to you when there's other fight, when there's, you know, do I follow these people? No, but I listen to what they have to say. And there's a reason why they're saying it. Number one, they want to be right. You know, because they still have to handle the backlash from their investors if they don't call it right. And not only that, they make tons of fees. They get, you know, trust me, ladies and gentlemen, they've got a program for you ready as they're coming out, just like bond guru Jeffrey Gunlatch. He said this morning that he absolutely believes the S&P 500 is going to go below the lows that the index hit early in 2018. And he says he's pretty sure of this bear market. And I'll guarantee you, every time all the notes that goes out to their investors and their analysts and so forth, there's a plan to sell you something so they can rack up those fees. But you have to pay attention because this is, you know, it's confirming in addition to what we're saying. He says the S&P is down 11% from its record high that was reached just in September. Wall Street traditionally defies a bear market as a decline of 20% or more. Stocks fall in bear market typically after something happens that doesn't make any sense at all. He says cryptocurrency is the mania this time around. And he says, Gunlatch says Bitcoin is an indicator of the market getting ahead of itself, much like during the dot-com bubble when the technology companies were being IPO'd that had no sales, or in 2006 when subprime lending went on longer than it should have. You know, and again, Dave, Jim Cramer, you know, I'm not a fan of Jim Cramer's, but once in a while he has something that I agree with.
Well, and one of the things you said today was that the persistent sell-off in the stock market has gone beyond concerns about a slowdown in global economic growth and what the Fed is going to do on interest rates this week and next year. You know, he said this was a soul-searching weekend for many of us because you left on Friday kind of in disbelief that the market could just fold. And it's just not worldwide slowing growth. It's not just the fear of Fed. It's basically exhaustion. You know, the Dow Jones, the S&P 500, NASDAQ started the week today by falling sharply in early trading, you know, after they all tanked about 2% on Friday. They're all down over 2% again today. Ahead of today's trading, the Dow, S&P 500, and NASDAQ were off 5.5%, each of them, for the month, making the worst December start in trading since 1980. Well, guess what? That 5.5% is now over 7.5%. All three stock indexes are in correction territory. You know, Cramer said, and we agree, it's not a safe market. It's a treacherous market. It has been, ladies and gentlemen. This is the most treacherous market, this is Cramer again, I've seen in many a year. You know, he believes the Fed, which meets tomorrow and Wednesday, and of course we'll be reporting on it, you know, is in a tough spot. We don't think it is. But he reiterates that if, you know, the Fed doesn't raise rates, they, you know, risk scaring the market about the economy, presumably because of sending mixed signals, you know, about, you know, its independence and other things. Cramer thinks the Fed should increase rates this week and then pause. Whether or not we think it should, you know, even though, you know, the conventional wisdom that's being talked about today is that the Fed won't raise rates on Wednesday, I still believe they will. I believe they've been locked in, even though they're more dissenters on, you know, the Open Market Committee. In keeping with their past and recent history, I don't think the Fed can help themselves. Melody, I guess we'll see, right?
I don't think they will. I didn't think they would the last time, but we haven't had If the market is up 1,000 points tomorrow, yeah, I think they might very well do it. But if it isn't up 1,000 points in the next 2 days, I think he'll, he could very well say we're holding till next year because of President Trump. I mean, if they do raise rates, I mean, already, of course, look at the 10-year yield though. I mean, that's back down to where, what type of impact is that actually having on the consumer at this point in time? But if he raises rates tomorrow, I mean, you're going to have a lot of folks running into what they view as a safe haven temporarily. So it could even put more pressure on those 10 years. So, let's roll the dice. Let's roll the dice and see what's going to happen. But
Yeah, it's like Casino Royale.
if the
It
market
is.
drops, yeah, if the market drops another 500 points, he's not going to raise rates.
Well, the year started with the 10-year at 2.4%. Then, of course, it hit two peaks in early October, and then again in early December when it got up, to close to, I guess, 3.3. But here we are now, what, at 2.86 roughly.
Yes.
It'll be interesting now that we've seen this month-long trend of falling slightly but steadily, falling interest rates in the bellwether 10-year.
And so I don't think he will. I don't know. Like I said, place your bets, ladies and gentlemen.
I know, right? I'm
Yes.
sure. I'm sure Las Vegas is having a good week
Yeah.
on this one.
But also, we're heading into a break here shortly. Some of the most bearish strategists is Morgan Stanley's Michael Wilson, and he's doubled down on his bearish 2018 call with the Wall Street low forecasts for 2019. And he's often warned his client that he believes stocks are in the rolling bear market, and he sees the S&P 500 adding just 5.6% by the end of 2019, finishing at 2750 after a roller coaster ride in 2018, driven by tighter financial conditions and peaks. He expects another range bound year driven by disappointing earnings and a Fed that pauses. And he wrote that, November 26, which is basically an eternity ago. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, right after a short break, and you're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website, dgscoins.com. And let's see, we're going to keep rolling right along because there's just, it makes you dizzy. And this is only the beginning, ladies and gentlemen. We, you know, on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we usually stick to finances. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, we'll go more into the little, you know, the political and so forth. And, you know, it's fascinating to see what's happening. And, you know, it's just like everybody's running around with their heads cut off. The ants have been stirred up. And it's,
you know. Too many zombie shows and movies, Melody. It's, you know, in this reality-based world we live in, it's hard to distinguish between fantasy and reality. We talk about that a little bit later, too. But, you're right. It's nuts out there.
Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen. There's more Americans that are predicting an economic downturn in the coming year. 28%. Only 28%. Think, and these are Americans, think that the economy is going to be better in the next 12 months. 33% expect it will get worse. 37% it will stay about the same. Americans must feel felt much better about the economy's prospects at the beginning of the year, however, when in January, 35% thought that the economy would be better. So
a lot more, it looks like. Yeah, a lot more believe it's going to be worse. I think that's the big news.
Yes.
With that survey, you know, our president, you know, who runs for a second term in 2020, you know, people are saying it could be hamstrung by a poor, approval rating, especially if the economy fall and the stock market continues to take a dive. You know, as we've reported here on Financial Survival, with few exceptions, many economists and executives are starting to predict an economic slowdown, you know, even a potential recession as early as sometime in 2019. Now, it may leave Donald Trump as first president running for re-election during a recession since Jimmy Carter in 1980, and we know what happened there, not just because of the recession, but Carter lost to Ronald Reagan. George H.W. Bush lost Bill Clinton in 92 as the economy was still recovering from a recession as well. You know, a downturn could take away perhaps the best selling point that the president has to offer, who knows how that could, manifest at the polls in 2020. But, Melody, there's more just bad news on the economic front.
Yes, home builder sentiment has dropped in December, and this is to its lowest point in more than 3 years, because buyers are hesitating to purchase new homes. Even though we've seen these mortgage rates pull back somewhat in the past month, according to the National Association of Home Builders, Wells Fargo Housing Market Index, it declined 4 points in December to 56. This is the lowest reading since May of 2015, and about 25% below December's 2017's level of 74. So, we hear that consumer demand exists, but that customers are hesitating to make a purchase because of these rising home costs. And we've certainly seen the mortgage rates jump at the start of 2017, then again in September, to the highest levels in 8 years, Dave.
Yeah, even though they fell in November, you know, they're still a full percentage point higher than 1 year ago. You know, newly built homes, you know, come at a price premium to existing homes. A lot of listeners already know this, and thus they're more sensitive to any changes in affordability. And mortgage rates are widely expected to move higher in 2019. Although if the Fed does, in fact, stabilize its tightening, we'll see what happens. Home builders have been focused on the move up and luxury sectors, even though demand for entry-level homes is high. But builders say that given the high costs of land and labor and materials, they're unable to build as many starter homes as they'd like to. You know, regionally, I found it interesting that, you know, builder sentiment dropped in the Midwest. It also plunged in the Northeast to that 50-point level, which is, you know, sort of the level above which is considered good and below which is bad. The West and South are still up there at 68 and 65, respectively.
Did you see the report today? It was out by Bloomberg. Factories in New York State?
Yes.
Do we have that in our report today?
No.
I didn't see that. No. But factories in New York State reported a sharp slowdown in business, sending the Federal Reserve Index tumbling this month to a 19-month low. So again, it's adding to signs that the U.S. economic growth is beginning to slow. The New York Fed's Empire State Manufacturing Index fell 12.4 points to 10.9. That's the lowest level since May of 2017 and the biggest one-month decline since May of 2016. So that this figure indicates business activity grew at a slower pace in December than in the prior month. And the Empire State survey showed weaker readings for new orders, shipments, and unfilled orders, though the measure of employment jumped to 26.1, a record in data going back to 2001. So, you know, it's just another sign that says, hey, you know, there's something going on, that things or the fundamentals are not as strong as, you know, what
you know, we're being led to believe.
Yes, you got it. Oil prices fall again on oversupply concerns. Brent crude oil was down 66 cents or 1.1% at $59.62 per barrel by noon. And then after early and rising as high as 61 in the morning, light crude fell 112 to 50.08. Let's see. U.S. crude futures fell after inventories at the storage hub of Cushing, Oklahoma, rose by more than 1 million barrels between December 11th and the 14th. And these numbers came in higher than anticipated, and it's definitely pointing to more supply and demand is weakening. So again, that makes the markets a little nervous.
Yeah, I mean, the benchmarks fell about 30% through October and November, you know, as the supply glut inflated inventories all over the world. They've stabilized in the last 3 weeks, you know, some investors doubt that planned supply cuts by OPEC and Russia are going to be enough to rebalance the markets. Now, as we've reported, OPEC and its allies have agreed to reduce output by 1.2 million barrels per day beginning in January, you know, a move that's going to be reviewed next April. Melody.
And, you know, I saw a headline today, you know, we all talk about the economy and so forth and people working and everything, and you know, we see what's going on in France, you know. And then I saw this sign, burnout, stress are leading more companies to try four-day work weeks. The study finds chronic fatigue clues in overactive immune. You know, I don't know. It's just, what's the angle there? You know, there's always an angle, ladies and gentlemen. So they're just not going to give, you know, give us a 4-day work week, goodness of their heart that they're concerned about our stress and fatigue. Of course, they can't, you know, it's difficult to and to be accurate and function properly when you're stressed and fatigued. But, you know,
I think it's been a long time coming. I think companies have known about this and have seen it. I think when it hits the point that, you know, they see productivity decreasing and perhaps earnings and profits, you know, that's what you're right.
Yeah, I mean, for them, that's their angle.
It's not about the individual employee per se. It's about earnings and profits.
And my question is, who in the heck works a 40-hour work week anyway? I know very few people who work 40 hours.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. I mean, people who've been in the workplace for more than 10 years, particularly, I would say, middle management and up, you know, they're the ones who've taken the brunt, not just, but by and large, of the hundreds of thousands of people who were laid off as mergers and acquisitions and bankruptcies, later bankruptcies, increased. So I think that's certainly there. But certainly, you know, the people who've come into the workplace in the last 10 years after downsizings, after M&As, they're the ones who are working 30 hours a week if they're lucky. Or some are working, you know, 38, 39, and, less enough that companies don't have to pay health benefits, for example.
Yeah, but I thought technology would be helping the middle management. Isn't technology supposed to make things easier and better? Personally, I believe it makes it more difficult. To me, I think technology makes it more stressful. I believe sometimes technology makes it harder, your job harder, not easier.
Just wait till we see the rise of the robots. If in fact big companies in particular are going to be driven by advanced technology for the sake of it, then we're in big trouble, and there will be a giant revolt among, you know, the millions of people who are likely to lose their jobs or to downsize into 15 and 20 hour, $20 per hour week jobs instead of the, you know, the 40, 50 and up dollars per hour. I think that's the proof will lie in that pudding. That may end up being beyond our lifetimes, but I suspect not. I suspect it'll be a lot sooner.
Absolutely. And these the governments have been warned by, you know, all these big tech companies. Governments aren't doing anything to solve this problem that's going to occur with technology, taking jobs away from the people. I mean, that's why these technology companies are pushing for all these, universal basic incomes, just to give people something, when the technology takes their job. That's not the answer. That's not the answer.
Keep human beings in jobs.
but governments are they're going to be hit with an issue. And you're right. Things are going to get, I think, very nasty when people begin to rise up and say, but hey, let's just give them a 4-day work week. And that way they, become a little less, a little more laid back, a little more, Anyway, Trade Advisor Navarro, excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, he says that the Fed is the biggest threat to the economy. And, of course, this was just right after the president blasted the Fed this morning. The White House advisor, Peter Navarro, he doubled down. And, of course, he's singling out the Fed as the biggest threat to U.S. economic growth. I don't think that's the case, but he says we have zero inflation for all practical purposes. and strong economic growth. The only argument I'm hearing for the Fed, I mean, these people, I'm sorry, but...
is zero inflation for all practical purposes. Come on, ladies and gentlemen.
I mean, really?
That just lacks credibility. I mean, to be nice, it lacks common sense, everything we've been hearing. You know, even, you know, the 2.whatever% inflation, which is, you know, grotesquely lower than what it really is. But God, gosh, when you say zero inflation, come on.
Oh, we all live in this weird little world.
Oh, my word. You know,
but you know what? The point, what I want to say too, I mean, you also have calls coming from Wall Street that they want the Fed also to stop hiking. But, I mean, Yellen said it, Bernanke said it, and Powell's going to do it. They're going to be accommodative to the market. And I think that's what I think they won't raise rates this time. But anyway.
Yeah, I mean, Navarro's White House Office of Trade and Manufacturing Policy Director, you know, he said months ago the president started pointing out that the Fed was going too far too fast. You know, the others have urged the Fed to pause what they call their double-barreled blitz of higher interest rates and tighter liquidity. It's coming from a lot of ends here this week, Mel, and I think we're going to see it ramp up tomorrow, you know, in advance of decision-making and announcement day on Wednesday afternoon.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. Well, you, Navarro had said Trump was in good company on rates, citing a Wall Street Journal op-ed published over the weekend from Stanley Druckenmiller and former Fed Governor Kevin Warsh. Of course, you know, they urged to pause their... I think you already mentioned that, but the reason I wanted to bring this up was... the time to have been more hawkish was earlier in this decade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so let's see. We're almost ready to go into a break here. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. DGScoins.com. DGScoins.com is the website, and everything is a bargain here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Make sure you give us a call. Do some comparison shopping. I do comparison shopping on online websites just to make sure my prices are as competitive. And I can say, Dave, we beat their prices probably 95% of the time. So, 800-375-4188. We're heading into a break. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Vallon. We'll be right back.
Just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today.
today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Again, you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom here with Dave Allen. Well, we're going to continue on, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Brexit vote. Today, Theresa May said that she intended to reschedule a delayed vote in Parliament on a Brexit plan. I guess it's going to start on January 14th. Many members of the House are concerned that we need to make a decision soon, and we intend to return to the meaningful vote debate in the week commencing. So, yeah, she postponed the vote for the holidays and, you know, get everybody back in a good mood, I suspect.
Maybe more cooperative, more of an open mind. They've got particularly the Irish border issue, which perhaps we'll talk about another day. That seems to be, holding up some support in Parliament that she might otherwise get. But instead, we'll travel farther east to Turkey, who says it's not softening its stance on the U.S.-backed Kurds in northern Syria. You know, Turkey's threatened to attack them. You know, that's much to the alarm of American defense and intelligence officials. Speaking yesterday, the Turkish foreign minister maintained that Ankara would not accept continued Kurdish parliamentary presence in the area. You know, he argued that contrary to Pentagon warnings, Turkish actions would not endanger U.S. troops working alongside the Kurdish People's Protection Units, they're known as YPG, that his government, Turkey, views as a primary enemy. You know, Erdogan's focus, president of Turkey, on the Kurds as a primary threat has complicated Washington's plan in Syria, which include relying on YPG fighters to push out the Islamic State. You know, Turkish President Erdogan threatened on Friday that his forces would enter the northern Syrian town of Manbij if the U.S. doesn't remove the Kurdish fighters.
You know, the White House has continued, has repeatedly warned against carrying out any such a plan. Any threat from Erdogan prompted a call from President Donald Trump the same day. The two did agree to more effective coordination between their countries' operations in Syria. At least 2,000 U.S. troops are still working alongside the Kurdish Syrian Democratic Forces, the SDF, in the country's north. So the Pentagon said that unilateral military action into northeast Syria by any party, particularly as U.S. personnel may be present or in the vicinity, is of grave concern. Dave.
Well, Turkey and the U.S. previously agreed on a deal to pull the Kurdish fighters out of the area, but Ankara complains that the U.S. hasn't followed through on its promises. Turkey's lamented American arms, training, and air support that it gives to Kurdish forces. You know, they maintain ISIS was one, or now ISIS, was one of the main serious problems in both Syria and Iraq, but ISIS is not the only terrorist organization. There are other small groups and many foreign terrorists as well. That, again, was the Turkish foreign minister. Now, Syria analyst Noah Bonzi of the International Crisis Group emphasized the growing urgency of Washington's messy conundrum. He says the U.S. has sound reasons to continue to support the YPG, but doing so while the PKK maintains an active insurgency against its NATO ally is an unsustainable situation. You know, nothing is easy as you think it ought to be, especially in warfare, Melody, where, you know, it makes strange bedfellows and sometimes, you know, turns friends into enemies.
You know, and that's what I find interesting about Qatar. Qatar Petroleum is looking to invest at least $20 billion in the United States over the next couple of years. This is from the chief executive, said after the Gulf Arab state quit OPEC, freeing it from potential legal risks in the United States. Sayed al-Kayabi, don't ask me to say that again.
That was impressive.
It even impressed myself. That's why I said, don't ask me to say it again. Who holds the energy portfolio of the world's top liquefied natural gas producer. He also said yesterday that Qatar aimed to announce its foreign partners for the new gas trains it is building by the middle of next week. And he added that Qatar could carry out the project alone with no international oil company at its side if no good offers were made. Kayabi said, mark my words, if I don't get a good deal, we go alone. And so I'm not quite sure what all that is truly about, what they, you know, what will their investment be in the United States?
Gas trains? Yeah, that's what it seems like. Didn't see anything else about that story. So we'll have to follow this in the coming weeks.
So I find that real interesting.
And Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is trying to pull Canada out of a multi-billion-dollar arms deal with the Saudis. He said that yesterday. You know, he said, we are engaged with the export permits to try and see if there is a way of no longer exporting these vehicles to Saudi Arabia. He told that to a Canadian TV station without elaborating. The deal, worth a reported $13 billion, would supply the Saudi military with armored vehicles manufactured by General Dynamics' Canadian division. His comments represent an evolution in Ottawa's stance towards Saudi Arabia. Sound familiar? In March, Trudeau defended the deal, saying that honoring the contract fully meets our national obligations and Canadian laws. And just in October, he said he didn't want to leave Canadians holding a billion-dollar bill because we're trying to move forward on doing the right thing. He said that losing the deal would cost Canada a billion Canadian dollars, that's equivalent to $750 million, but also said that his government could freeze exports for certain weapons if it found they had been misused.
Well, some of the other vehicles slated for export, dozens are described as heavy assault and equipped with cannons. Now, this decision, a potential decision, is one that a few other governments have either taken up or are considering. Of course, this is the murder of the Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. And, of course, we all know what happened to Khashoggi on October 2nd. Well, you know, the Saudis would just pick up whatever he canceled. If he pulled out of that deal with the Saudis, wouldn't the Saudis just pick it up with the U.S.?
Well, they could. They could. I think, with the incoming Democratic control of the House, it could be more difficult. Still could be done. I mean, obviously, General Dynamics headquarters are here in the U.S., but there could be a changing political dynamic that could make it more difficult for the president and his administration to pick up that slack. Now, it doesn't mean, you know, it wouldn't be picked up, but I think, especially given both houses' passage of a resolution last week, which calls Yemen the world's worst humanitarian crisis. You know, the UN calls it that as well. Talking about the Saudi airstrikes that are responsibility for the majority of civilian deaths there. Trudeau's move would, you know, follow the decisions of Germany and Denmark, Finland and the Netherlands, each of whom have announced a halt to arms sales to the kingdom. So it'll be interesting. I think this this action last week, you know, whereby Congress calls on the president to, you know, end its involvement in Yemen with, you know, more strategic support of the Saudi airstrikes, you know, which have killed thousands, tens of thousands of people, and reportedly is leading to the starvation of as many as 14 million people.
That's huge.
It's outrageous. Now, Saudi Arabia is the planet's largest weapons importer, and you know, those purchases have exploded in size since it began its intervention into Yemen in 2015. So the heat is on, Melody.
You know, it was interesting. I saw an interview briefly, and perhaps it was so brief I shouldn't even bring this up, but this gentleman was being interviewed, and he said that this administration has not appointed an ambassador to the Saudis, to Saudi Arabia, and to the and the only communications really to keep them like in check are basically just emails back and forth between Kushner and them. So there's no one to say, well, you know, if you do that, you know, this is going to happen, that's going to happen, and, you know, maybe you better think twice about it. And, you know, so, you know, this young, what's his name, MBS?
Oh, Mohammed bin Salman.
Yeah. He's just, you know, feeling his oats and, you know, strengthening his muscles, and, you know, he's doing all kinds of things, and there's no one there to, you know, really...
Ambassador of the Middle East, Jared Kushner. I'm surprised in a way that, and maybe it has privately, that Netanyahu hasn't brought some pressure upon the president, our president, to appoint some ambassadors. I mean, I'm certainly no Middle East expert whatsoever. It just seems that the lack of ambassadors, especially with some major countries, is an effective way of you know, cooling down and even stopping potential crises right, you know, in their path. And that usually happens, you know, an ambassador calling and then meeting with another ambassador, you know, of that country. It is alarming.
Yeah, but you know what, Netanyahu, he wants the unrest. You know, he creates the unrest. He wants Iran wiped out. You know, that's what he's pushing. You know, and I'm not a Middle East expert either, and I'm not an Israel expert either, but if you look to see, you know, all the things that I mean, Israel is still bombing, well, I think they're still bombing Syria and so forth, and, you know, on a regular basis, and I mean, there's so much that isn't talked about that, you know, no one can really, it's hard for people to put the, you know, all, you know, to connect all the dots. But no, I think Netanyahu wants war. And
perhaps
I think he wants Iran wiped out.
Perhaps my suggestion was a tad naive.
No, it's just, you know, that's, you know, that's not what I meant, but...
I know you didn't, but I mean...
Yes, but it was.
Thank you. Thank you. I resemble that remark and stand corrected, ladies and gentlemen.
But, excuse me, let's go on and talk about, what's Philippines?
Oh, well, this is just something I saw by accident. You know, there are these three bells that were looted by U.S. troops over 100 years ago. Well, they've been returned to their church in the Philippines. President Rodrigo Duterte praised his countrymen and the U.S. at a ceremony today where the treasures were taken 117 years ago. He and then a number of citizens who were at this ceremony were then allowed to come up and ring this bell, which frankly had a lovely tone to it for, I guess it was taken well care of here. The bronze bells were seized during the Philippine-American War as part of reprisals following a massacre. Just this past August, the U.S. Embassy had announced it would return the so-called Balangiga Bells after decades of pressure from the Filipino community. So, interesting thing. I'm sure if you have internet and you want to find out more about this and to see the ceremony, search for looted bells in Philippines.
That's kind of interesting.
Interesting, huh?
Yes, it is. And I just looked out my window. I'm looking at the most beautiful sunset I have seen. The sky is just red.
Wow.
Beautiful, beautiful sky.
Wow.
Hope it doesn't mean snow, but...
No, it probably means some significant air pollution somewhere over the horizon.
Yeah. Well, maybe.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't be so cynical about that.
But... Anyway, we're pretty much at the end of the program. We got just about 30 minutes, 30 seconds left. 1-800-375-4188. I want to thank the listeners for putting up with my as I'm recovering from this first allergy turned into a winter cold, and I should soon be back to my same old voice. So I want to thank you for joining me today, Dave.
Look for our American Survival Newsletter coming out soon after the show, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, sirree. Make sure you sign up at the website, dgscoins.com. Until then, until tomorrow, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.